Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You better run. Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Sydney.
And I'm Kirk.
And you have entered the Lokiverse, a podcast dedicated to the Disney Plus show Loki. And folks, we were in the Lokiverse for a little bit. We kind of got a little spaghetti. We were trying to do all this stuff. And we are back to talk season 2, episode 2, Breaking Brad. And before we get into that, one of the reasons why we weren't actually on right away was we had a little thing called New York Comic Con. And, you know, Kirk, since you are our sideline reporter there.
I was not on the sideline, baby. I was on the field.
You were on the field. What was New York Comic Con like? And we're going to, I know we were going to probably do it at the end, but I figured what the hell. Let's explain what to do.
Why don't you go and point that out, Sylvie?
And Sylvie likes to, control the conversation. So I
talk
like
about
to throw
Comic-Con at the end of the podcast. No, I want to hear about it. And so, this is why we're recording on Monday instead of Friday.
Let's just say that we can go over it at the end. I just want to apologize in advance to the listeners, because I'm pretty much sleepwalking here, and I may not have the deep dive kind of analysis that I like to have. So I apologize in advance for that.
You'll be fine.
But it
did happen. Voice is going to be a little bit deeper for those who don't listen well in the low octaves. I apologize.
A lack of sleep, or were you just screaming the entire time?
Well, it's a combination. It's a combination. It was up early at 5 in the every morning and home at 10, and screaming over the crowd, and so people can listen and talk, so people can I can answer people's questions and stuff. I always wear a mask when I do conventions and stuff, because it's just too dangerous. And so that makes it even harder. What was your call? What'd you say, Alex?
No, I said, was it as packed as it normally is or was?
Okay. So according to New York Comic Con contacts that I have, they're saying that there were 250,000 people.
Wow.
Now, I did this for 10 years from 2019 was the last year I was at New York Comic Con, and I had done that for about 9 or 10 years prior. And they never were above 160,000. So that's wildly crazy. Mm-hmm. The Thursdays used to be a short day. They used to start at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and just go to 8 or something. Now it was a full day. It was from 10 a.m. until 7 at night. And it was as busy on Thursday as it was on Saturday.
Mm. So the real question is...
It was absolutely, absolutely insane.
So the real question is, did Tom stop by? And
no, but I was while we were broke here for a minute, Sydney was asking me about how Tom and the Loki print I did sold, and it did very well. I sold a number of the color prints, but the exclusive I did almost sold out. So that was good. It was real popular, and people were buying it fully and telling me that they were doing it fully to have him sign it. So
really,
he got to see a lot of my work.
I'm on one of the greatest Loki kind of fan pages on Facebook, and it's it's a lot of ladies, and I mean, duh, right? But a lot of them were posting their pictures with Tom.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see.
Yeah, Chris Evans was there too. So I knew some people that came by and visited that get a lot of pictures of with them, with actors and stuff. They had one of his Captain America shields, and they had him, Chris Evans, sign it and get pictures with him. Yeah, it was really cool.
That would look great on a wall.
A friend of mine who's been going forever has a picture of one of the Captain America shields, like the $300 one.
Yeah, and that's the one they're carrying.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not that good of an uncle. You know, I let him hold it, but I'm not buying it. And, you know, I've lived, you know, a stone's throw away for all these years, and I've never gone. And, you know, this was the first year I really wanted to go, and I couldn't because I had a commitment. But next year, I'm definitely going to try to go. And
yeah, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it. You can't do it in a day, really. It's so
no, you have to go like a couple days.
Yeah. And they've relayed it out from when I last was there in 2019. It used to always just be straight aisles, and the aisles were mixed, and then you'd have big blocked areas within two aisles or whatever that would be an area like Marvel or something. Now they've kind of hollowed out the whole center of the arena, or whatever you want to call it, the exposition center, and that's where all your large publishers and video games and things like that are, and they have huge blocks of space. And there's a lot of room to move in and out and through it and see it. And then along the perimeter, along the back and the sides and everything, are all like the retail and the artists and things like that. And it makes it a little cleaner, you know, a little less congested. And I thought it was a good improvement.
Did you?
They also have, overall, they have more space too. The Javits inside is bigger.
Right.
My booth space was at 4467. And they'd never had over 3,000, aisle 3,000. So that whole 4,000 area was brand new that had moved on. So it definitely picked up about a third more space to what it used to be.
Well, the reason why I wanted to bring this up in the beginning was for a couple of reasons. One, cons are back. And I can't I don't mean to be funny about that. But, you know, being part of Podcastica, one of the things that I love about being part of this group and being part of the Patreon group is, like, last year we went to Atlanta. That's what it's all about. We got to meet all the, you know, all the cast of The Walking Dead, and it's the fun part. You get to really talk to these people, and 99.99% of the time they are gracious and wonderful. And if you get a chance to go to any of these type of things, it's worth it. It's totally and utterly worth it. You get kind of awestruck. I always say, I just want to write a letter and just give it to them, because I have all these awesome thoughts and I don't want to screw it up. And like, when you meet them, you're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. But it's just so neat to see them, because you have this opinion of them, but they don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And last year, and then I'll leave it on this, there was a bunch of us, Daphne and Damien and myself, we were talking to Michael Cutlets.
Yeah.
And oh, fun.
We had, like, it was towards the end of the con, we were talking for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Aww.
There was nobody at his thing. He was there every day. And we were just talking about the Walking Dead universe, to some of his older career, to everything. And you don't get that, you know, and it was just so much fun. And like I said, I was always leery of going to New York because it's just such a crazy thing. And now I'm like all in. I'm just so waiting for next year.
Check it out.
And now I know what some guy that draws, you know, I can always say hi to him, but enough about that. Mm-hmm. Now that I sucked up and maybe I can get an exclusive poster, let's talk about what we are here for, which is Breaking Brad. Who wants to go first on the title?
That's Kirk's job.
Oh no, come
on. Your job.
I don't have a lot of insight today into that, to the title. I'm not sure the title was meant to be as deeply rooted to the episode as other titles have been. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, the connections I make, obviously Breaking Brad is a play on the famous, you know, Breaking Bad TV show. which I thought, you know, was a nice tip of the hat and it's funny. Perhaps also, you know, in Breaking Bad, you've got a good guy who goes bad in the school teacher who becomes a drug dealer. And maybe here we've got a bad guy, Loki, who's going good. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like you're breaking bad or breaking good in our case. You know, it's kind of
Well, you also have, you know, X5.
Yeah, well, you have to break Brad in order to find Sylvie.
Which is exactly. I mean,
the interrogation is you have to break him during the interrogation.
Yeah, I think it's more of a pun than it is any kind of deep exploration.
I know. I tried to get there with the Breaking Bad reference, and you turned it on its head. It's about a bad guy going good. Because, I mean, look, he's almost having a hard time pulling off being a bad guy. And when he tried, he sounded even more, like, deranged than he did mischievous.
It is kind of funny that they talk about how, you know, he's always going to be a bad guy. He's always going to be a villain. Always will be. Always has been. Blah, 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 blah. But he's actually bad at it.
He
always fails.
And he talks about that. So he does talk about that.
He's not really supposed to be a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Well, he's that pain in the ass brother that, you know, is just an annoyance to Thor in certain ways. But I will say, you know, before we get into the cold open, which I know Sydney wants to do, there was a ton of Easter eggs in this thing. Yeah. And if you really kind of broke it down, it's pretty amazing the detail and how they're tying this into the bigger MCU. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing. I'm going to kind of touch on some of that, but I know, Sydney, you want to talk about that cold open, and I'll let you go with that.
Well, I think there are Easter eggs in the cold open. And like Alex is saying, I kind of want to cover the whole cold open. I want you guys to just jump in whenever you have points of your own. I'm going to kind of go consecutively, but I do know that there was like Easter eggs in some of the like imagery and the posters outside the cinema and things like that. So if you've got a point, just tell me. But I mean, I am really going to do my best to not neg this entire episode. It isn't my favorite. And I think that the first point that I have is that I really didn't like the way that they jumped straight into this very first episode or this first part of the episode. So obviously it starts, a time door opens. You've got Loki and Mobius. They're in 1977 London, and they let us know that this is a time and a space on the sacred timeline. The dialogue starts super quick, and Loki is saying that she's not here. It's too safe. And it just posed so many questions for me. I actually went back and watched it immediately again because I thought that maybe I had missed a minute before it started somehow. But, you know, how long have they been searching for Sylvie now? How much time has passed? Are they searching a lot of places? Is this the first place they've been? Like, how do they know that they need to be wearing tuxedos at this location and this time and this space?
I don't think they've been searching very long. I think this all is supposed to be kind of happening very consecutively. You know what I mean? It's like this is very shortly after, I'm assuming, the General Dodd. Is that?
Docs, like Paradox.
Right. Docs, sorry. And when she's taken her soldiers and gone off on whatever mission they're going to do, that's when I feel like this is just picking up right there. Maybe a short period of time where they were trying to search down and find her, and they found him. So they're going to go find him and see if through him they can find where she went, and then also Sylvie.
Yeah. Well, you know, they even added some Mobius dialogue in post over the rest of the dialogue. So after they turn the corner and they now see the marquee and the fancy car and X5 getting out of the fancy car, you hear Mobius speak, but you actually don't see his mouth move. You can kind of see the side of his face. And he says something like, "But you said you wanted to find Sylvie, right? With Docs and X5 gone, this is our only lead." And I mean, I think it was just kind of because there wasn't enough introduction in this episode, and so they just kind of had to help us out a little bit. I just wasn't really sure what we were up to. Okay, so I think that
before you move on, I think also important right there at the beginning, this is the first time that they clarify in the I don't even know what you call it, the the intro notes or title when they jump into this timeline, and it says sacred timeline. It says the year, right. London, it says London and the date, and then it says sacred timeline. Whereas when we saw Sylvie at the end of last episode end up in Oklahoma, that was a branch. They clarified.
Right. Yeah. Timeline. No, I was going to point that out. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things. If you're not paying attention, it's an important thing.
Yeah, it is. I think
I didn't notice it last week. I noticed it at the beginning of this episode, and then it was pointed out, of course, online that they did it last week, which is critical to know because of how this plot develops in this episode. You know, wherever you are, it's going to matter. We also established at the beginning of this that they're here because they got a hit on a temp pad that belonged to Hunter X5 before it went dark. So I do want to ask you guys, I mean, I think this storyline develops through the episode, but I don't know why it went dark, because we established later, or like Casey does, that the modifications done to it weren't to protect it from TVA tracking. So if that's the case, how did it go dark?
Right. Well, we still haven't found out that he made modifications, or someone made modifications to his template and temp pad, and they still have not figured out what it is. They bring it to Obi. He doesn't have time to do it, so they're trying to do it. They can't figure out. Casey says, oh, I know it doesn't do that, but I'll have to look at it. It's going to take me a while to diagnose what it is that they've done. And they never really come back to that.
Thank you, Kirk, because I was going to ask that today as well. I wasn't sure if Casey had ever really kind of told us. That helps, because that means that there is a mystery ahead of us.
Correct.
That
correct.
It's not just forgotten to be explained or anything like that.
Well, I think there's a greater mystery too that's starting to evolve, and that's another, I think that's another sign of it, that there's someone else who's architecting or helping design the flow of things that are happening here. That was one. I don't think that's anything he did to that template. Is my guess.
Really?
Did that. Yeah, I think somebody did that for him. But go ahead.
Oh yeah, I mean, I could see what you're saying. He doesn't strike me as the intellectual type, you know? I mean, okay, so just before we follow Brad Wolf inside this theater, I want to say that I love all the costumes. I love the costumes of the 70s people outside, which are a little bit more casual, like the wide leg jeans. And then they go inside and everyone's wearing formal wear, 70s style. I loved it. I like that they followed through, like also with the hairstyles for that. And we see like punks later on, which in that time period.
Well, yeah. And that the interesting thing about that, it was 1977, Britain. Okay. Right. Why is that important? Because that was the height of punk. Right. And, you know, it was just kind of an interesting thing. You know, you could even take the deep dive that, you know, that's right around the time when Star Wars was still, and Star Wars is kind of in the MCU because, you know, Spider-Man talks about it. Which is a funny scene, I think, because he calls it old, and they're all like, "How old is this brat?" Basically, that said, one of the things that they do talk about, which is kind of a side note, was Kingo was in it.
Yeah,
there was posters of Kingo, and they were talking about Zaniac. It's just kind of interesting how they are tying it all together. It's just like those little tidbits. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them.
There's a poster that's got Telephone Man, and it has like a dial pad on his stomach, and then I think he's got like, or either his sidekick has like a telephone that he like swings around and hits people with. Like, that can't be real. Kirk, tell me that's not a real comic.
Is a real comic book character who was in Captain America. Yeah.
Right. Oh,
okay.
lame as fuck, but lame. But
I think they're kind of, well, I don't know the other one that you guys just brought up. Kingo, is that what you said?
Kingo is
the character from the Eternals movie.
He's the guy that
keeps, you know, saying he's his relative, and then has a career for a lifetime of, you know, 50, 60 years, and then disappears and comes back and says, oh, I'm, you know, the grandson of that guy, and da 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 da, da, and then goes on with another career for 15, 20 years.
So That ties us to Zaniac, the movie star. So we follow Brad Wolf inside, and we see him eating up the attention from all of these reporters because he's like a legit movie star. And honestly, it looks super fun. I don't know if the writers intend for us to be judging him for being like egotistical or something and loving the attention that comes with being a movie star, because I'm not judging him for it. I mean, that's his style. That's his personality. And he seems like he's doing a great job. And then comes the twist. Because he remembers Mobius. This is not the original timeline version of him. This isn't like his non-variant self. This is X5. They saw him last week in the office. And what's he doing here? Because, you know, he's supposed to be out there, mission unclear to me, either finding Sylvie or bombing a million timelines. And yet he's here.
Well, let me ask the two of you what you think about that, because it was posed to me by my wife as we watched the episode. What happened to the real Brad that was in that timeline?
Okay.
Do they disappear when the TVA guy shows up, or what? Do they just kind of merge and become one person? How does that all work?
No, I mean, I think that it has to be nefarious, right? He had to kill him. Rid of him. He pruned him. He killed him. He's trapped in a basement. Unless I had other ideas. Like, what if X5 shows back up at the moment that he made his variant mistake? The moment, the Nexus event right before the branch did. And he used his little, like, time turner, you know, remote control or wristwatch. I think they all have different ways of doing it. And then, like, just... does this work? And then, like, rewound the mistake from happening, and he can just insert himself? No, I think he had to have killed the real Brad, the non-variant Brad. But the show does not confirm that for us. So we can't sit here and be like, well, he's a murderer, because they didn't confirm, they didn't show us that. So as all we know, he's just living his best life as a movie star.
I think he's just trying to hide out because he's done.
Yeah, but if he were to do that, though, I would think it would have created a Nexus event, because that's what we've been led to understand.
Right, but at this point... he's like, and there's a bazillion branches. What's another branch?
That's true. That's true.
I mean, you know, my question is why? I know there's some kind of connection. His name is Brad Wolf, and
his character in the comic was named Brad Wolf as well. The actor,
right?
The character in the comic, the Zaniac character, was in a Thor comic book. Is portrayed in the movies by this actor named Brad Wolf, who then ends up being possessed by the spirit of this demon called Zaniac, and ends up becoming a real monster character. So I don't know if that's in store for us or not down the road or what.
Right.
Brad Wolf offers Mobius and Loki a drink, two whiskeys or three, and then he runs away. And so Loki and Mobius have to chase on foot. And Loki kind of does that, our area god. And he shoots those green power balls out of his hand. And so I wanted to ask you guys, do those have a name?
Green power balls, I think.
Green balls.
Okay. green balls. It just doesn't sound that cool when I type it out on a piece of paper and then Loki shoots green power balls.
No, it actually does. When you say balls, everybody
laughs. It was pretty, it was nice to see him, you know, he's been so neutered, so to speak. Speaking of balls, he's been so neutered while he's at the TVA.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
It was so great to kind of see him be able to cut loose and start using his powers, you know, and he's...
So Loki's shooting green power balls, and he's demonstrating some other skills that he has in this episode. So he uses telekinesis to knock that time rewinder straight out of X5's hand.
Yeah.
And then he illusions an entire group of like ne'er-do-wells and punks there in the alley. And I just like really feel it's important for me to say that he illusioned the entire group, because there was a time, I mean, my first watch, where I thought he had only... Okay, first I thought that he illusioned the black metal bar that X5 picks up and that wasn't real. But then I realized it was the person he was hitting at wasn't real. And then I realized that when Loki started talking, the entire crowd of people, all like 18 of them, were completely still. So he illusioned the entire crowd. He duplicate casts himself times three, which is a great number of Lokis to have. And then he uses his shadow, like replete with horns to pin Brad to the wall. And I just loved all of that. I loved that the Loki, like that was the real Loki and not the duplicate, was the one on the, I guess, our right. That was kind of a surprise and it was cute. And then I loved that horns were on the Shadow's helmets. It just reminds us of original Loki and, you know, MCU Loki and all of that. So
I think also
really
the way that there's a number of things in this cold intro, that cold open, that they're doing to show us that Loki is a bit theatrical himself. you know, and that we're here in a movie set and a movie premiere and everything else, but don't forget Loki is also theatrical, and he's, you know, they both got tuxedos on, but Loki's a little over the top with his, you know, like a little frills,
he really
is. he says, hey,
they come out the cuff even on his arms, they cut, like, frills are coming out of
right exactly, which I thought was great. And then nobody, you know, he can't, Brad can't even see the shadows that are holding him against the wall.
Oh, interesting point.
So, because they're behind him, and they make sure to show you a side shot so that you can see that they're like reaching out of the wall and holding him so he doesn't see what's happening on the wall behind him. And yet now these Lokis, and they grow their big horn and everything else. So who's that for? That's for Loki. You know what I mean? He's just entertaining himself with his flamboyance and his drama, you know?
It's called panache.
Mobius even calls him out, and he's like,
I think it's kind of like they're saying, look, he's finally now free to use his powers again, and he's doing it for a good purpose, and he's happy about it, and it feels good, you know what I mean? So he's enjoying it. You know, I mean, that's how I took that.
It's probably frustrating to be Loki and to have to be in the TVA all of the time, because you want to be able to conjure, I don't know, I was thinking about Sylvie and how she's at McDonald's and she's like working for a living. But I'm like, can't you just conjure up money? I would just fabricate this all the time. But they are so probably used to
but it's not about the money. It's about the fact that she had no life her entire existence. You know, as a child, ripped out of her life and thrown into the apocalypses and having to run in apocalypses in order to survive. She's now trying to say, you know, savor it. Like, I want to experience all that I missed, you know, working,
people,
you know, relaxing, you know, like sitting on my truck, all that stuff.
Yeah, she got a pretty cool truck pretty quick. And I agree.
It's green, too.
Oh, I didn't make the connection. No, I did not mean to like degrade her interest in McDonald's to money. I think she is totally enjoying it and she's kicking ass at it. She's refilling the straw dispenser before anyone asks her to do it. She doesn't even need to be asked. She said, that's already done. Don't worry about
it. Done. I got that shit unlocked.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about why they are pinning X5 to the wall, because I kind of started my little speech I'm giving about the cold open by saying I'm not sure what he's done wrong. He does seem to be living his best life on the timeline. It becomes clear pretty quickly that he's supposed to be elsewhere doing things at Dox's behest, but instead he's here being a movie star. They're pinning him to the wall because they think he knows where Sylvie is. That's pretty much the take home there.
Yep.
It's pretty much because of where they want to know where Sylvie is.
That's why they're trying to get him.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole, which I thought was kind of interesting, because it's almost as if they don't give a shit about Dox and her plan and what she's doing. It doesn't seem like, you know, because he even talked, oh, she's got a mission. We were on our mission and I jumped out on the mission. And instead of being like, well, what exactly was the mission and where is it going and how's it done? It's like all they're interested in is getting to Sylvie, which I thought was a little bit of a, wasn't explained all that well.
Yeah.
Why is she so much the key?
Well, I think maybe just because they miss her and they're worried that she's going to get hurt. But you're right. If they're talking about Dox being out there doing God knows,
I think they're assuming that Dox is trying to get her. So they're trying to, and they just don't even need to know anything about Docs because they just want to get out ahead of it. They want to get to her before Docs gets to her and she prunes her.
What do you think of the theory? I've heard this theory that she's actually Sylvie.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay, so we did talk about how that could be the case last week. And the idea floated then was that she was hiding right under their nose and knew it, that she was still anti-TVA potentially and knew she was Sylvie and like worked for the TVA anyways. I actually kind of feel it's also possible that if it is Sylvie, then she had her mind wiped upon her judgment and capture at the Kaylee Fleming age and has been living in the TVA as an employee, a mind wiped employee all of this time. Because I think that even it's not necessary for that to be the case, but if it were the case, I do think that all of these employees have whispers of their previous life. and I think she does whisper Sylvie quite a bit. I mean, she even sets up an entire system of pruning devices all connected to one central like computer hub that just like Sylvie did when she bombed the timelines in
She essentially created a portable TVA. That's basically what she did. She created a hub center that was kind of like acting as a temporary TVA where they could go in and out and come back and forth and go to timelines.
But do you see the connection to the setup that Sylvie built in Rock's cart in season one, where she had like a million of those those reset charges. And under each reset charge was a little teeny tiny time door that was only like 6 inches by 6 inches. Yeah. And she had them all connected to each other. And then all at once, all of the reset charges fell through holes and bombed many, many timelines, which I'm going to have to say right here and now. I'm sorry, Sylvie, but you murdered just as many people as Docs did in this episode by bombing the timeline then when you did it. Docs is doing that now. There are definitely similarities.
Yeah, right. I got a question. And maybe I asked it last week. I'm almost certain I asked it last week, but we're exterminating all these timelines, right? First off, why is that a bad thing? And what do I mean by that is, and I bring this up again, the system can't support all these variants.
But
my point being is going to contradict myself because then you've got Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse where everybody kind of lives their life and everybody's fine. So maybe I'm like answering my
right
own question.
Right now, without the loom being able to pull each one of those lines that come perpendicular, a branch that comes perpendicular off of the sacred timeline, without it being able to weave them into a parallel structure so that they do not intersect each other. Because these branches, as they protrude off of the sacred timeline, if they're not the same slope, they're going to intersect at some point. And when they do, that's an incursion and it causes multiversal war. It causes the destruction of one universe. It causes breakdowns in the fabric of reality. But if Obi can tame them all down into one rope-like structure, we could have infinite literal.
So it could look like a DNA strand, you're saying, where everything is kind of separate, but...
Yeah, totally. They're all going the same direction. They are flowing in one way.
What do you think about the fact that Sylvie is working at McDonald's? She doesn't get blown up. Meaning, going back to the point of
what their motivations are.
Well, not even what their motivation is, the general being her.
Sylvie, right. That is 100% what I think too, Alex. Like she leaves something that's been established as a branched timeline alone. We know that she's out there. We think
she's just trying to save her.
We think she's searching for Sylvie. And now I think she was searching for Sylvie because she wanted her timelines safe. She also wanted to prune all of those timelines. Why? Maybe because she knew it would result in incursions if she didn't. She didn't know that Obi existed and could maybe fix it at some point.
Well, all I know is there was a scene that was kind of a funny scene, but I think it's the most important scene in the whole entire show, which is when OB meets
Stacy.
You know, when they meet each other, what does he have him do? He has him sign the book. And I think this whole entire show, if somebody read the book, would solve everything. And I think that the book is going to end up saving them all.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's cool that Casey's no longer
I mean, who the hell reads directions?
I thought the funny part of that too was that he wants him to sign it.
I know,
you know, which is very kind of like, you know, me, like OB is Stan Lee and Casey's a fan wants to get him to sign his book.
And OB has his picture in the book, which is a weird twist. I think a lot of people read that to mean that OB is an earlier incarnation of He Who Remains or Miss Minutes, or, you know, is bigger and knows more than he lets on. I don't know if you guys have
I think, yeah, I do. I think we talked about this last week. I think there's a really good chance that He Who Remains took over the TVA from a different Kang, and or Council of Kangs, and that perhaps OB is a holdover from that, and he brought Miss Minutes to kind of take over the day to day, which kind of made OB obsolete, which is why he was, you know, never seen for hundreds of years down the little hole.
Miss Minutes is like OB 2.0.
But it doesn't give OB what you just prophesized. It doesn't give OB any special powers. It makes him what I think he is a neglected, put in a locker, forgotten about, kind of teased individual, which will end up being his superpower because he's been forgotten about, which means he knows a ton.
Here's an interesting, just kind of hit on me right now. In the comics, there is a person at the end of time, instead of the timekeepers it becomes found out that they're not real, and that who's really running this is He Who Remains. But He Who Remains is this like alien guy, old guy, who's lives at the end of time. And, you know, they did a version of Kang who's running it. And what it's possible that Obi will end up being the person in charge of the TVA in the end, and, you know, running it.
I like that. Just a thought. Well, it's certainly not going to be Sylvie because she thinks that this place is rotten.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't brought her around.
Not going to be Sylvie.
The interrogation room.
Great sequence.
Yeah. I think my favorite part.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I liked it.
Not my favorite. It just kind of seemed like instead of starting this whole mess with quote unquote torture, they could have just been like, hey man, where's Sylvie? If you can just tell us where she is, we'll take you right back to your movie premiere and you can be the most famous person in the planet and we'll even hide you in your timeline. It's just like, I don't care what else you've been up to. I don't care what Docs has been up to. Like, just literally tell me where Sylvie is. And he eventually does when his box gets small enough.
Which I thought that was so cool. I'm sorry.
It was cool. I thought it was a really important scene because I think that it's the series is about character development, you know, and I think this scene was quintessential in showing that, you know. I mean, we got to see that, you know, this guy, X5, right?
Brad,
that, you know, he comes off when we first meet him last episode as this kind of like, you know, nihilistic kind of Nazi kind of support goon for Docs. But what we find out now is that, you know, he's really much more complicated than that, and he wants to go back to his life, and he misses all of that and everything else. Then in addition, he confronts Loki with all of this truth about his past and about who he was, and brutally honest, right? And you can tell it's like ripping Loki up and making him question and doubt and everything else. And you start to think that Loki's unraveling, and then it becomes clear when he flips the tables on him and talks him back down into the floor, right? That he's in control of himself. He's not this unstable, you know, emotionally distraught guy that he used to be. He knows who he is now. And you can sit there and say, and he's, yeah, and I was bad, but, you know, and I've got to deal with that. I'm going to have to live with that. But, you know, I'm not going to let you manipulate me. And in contrast, the third person there, who's always been a rock of Gibraltar, right? Thought he knew himself, thought he understood the whole system, was really happy with everything the way it was, is starting to crumble. Mobius, he's actually starting to become very sensitive about the idea that he had a past life and he wants to experience that. And he's the one that ends up fucking losing it because he's not together. He's not in one page with himself. You know what I mean? I thought it was a great scene.
I loved the torture machine that looks like a kerosene heater on top of an industrial.
I'm not sure I like that.
I don't think I could do that much with it. It's like literally, it's like an industrial floor waxer, and you have to start it like you would a lawnmower. I thought it was just hilariously
put
together.
That was wacky, awful. That was funny. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you brought up Mobius, and I think that really segues into something that's so extremely important, which is the conversation that Mobius and Loki end up having over it. Slices of key lime pie because Mobius is upset that he punched or slapped, open-handed slap, like a Will Smith kind of thing.
Kind of face slapped him, yeah.
Right in the face.
He says.
You did. He lost it. And Loki tells a story, which is, remember that time when I was so angry with my father and my brother that I went down to Earth and I held the entire of New York hostage with an alien army. I tried to use the Mind Stone on Tony Stark, and when that didn't work, I threw him off the building. That wasn't tactical. I loved that. That was wonderful. It was just such a, like you said, he knows himself. He's no longer ashamed of things. He doesn't have to explain himself, or, you know, he doesn't feel that.
Well, he feels remorse, but he's not being controlled by his buttons anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. He's like addressing the guilt without it being like a dark shame inside of him that's eating him alive. Like it's out here on the table. I don't know. Is he going to be able to make amends to the Avengers or to New York at some point? I don't think we're going
well,
there.
If he saves all of time and everything, of course, that's pretty good amends.
This is a good point. So far, he's pretty much killed He Who Remains and set Docs loose on killing trillions of people. But we'll get there. We're going to get there.
I love also in that scene, it's like the pie room.
Yeah.
It's everything is green.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that all means. I just think that it's got to mean something.
Well, they think the green just again ties to Loki.
No, I'm just saying, but it's all key lime pie, and it's just interesting.
Here were the associations I brought to key lime pie. Key lime is a warm weather, is it a fruit? I'm not sure if it's a fruit. I think it is a fruit.
Limes are fruit.
Yeah, so it's a warm weather only grown fruit. It's also tends to be a southern fruit, southern food. Key lime pie, you know, it's thought of
it's
as
like Key right. West.
Yeah, it's Florida, Carolinas, Georgia, that kind of thing.
Are we going to talk about jet skis?
Well, yeah, I mean that. I think it's a little bit of a look into who and where Mobius comes from.
Oh, good. Oh my God, if he comes from Key West, that would be fun. Yeah. Well, so like every single vending machine in that room is selling key lime. I couldn't tell. I kept really trying to look, but I think that's the assumption everyone has.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, absolutely. I didn't think about its location like that, although I do love the keys. I was thinking that the TVA doesn't want to give their workers too many options. You know, everything there is supposed to be like so bureaucratic. Like, don't let these people love life. I mean, although key lime pie is delicious, it's like everything's perfunctory. You know, you have 17 minutes to eat it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can mean all those things. It can be all those things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but just like kind of what's up with OB and Casey. I was saying that once he gets this, I don't know, modification to the time loom kind of put, which he can't even get out there to adhere it to the time loom yet because the door is locked. But like if they can make all of time exist without incursions, I guess that sets up the TVA to be an important and long-lasting entity in the MCU. I think that that's how we kind of get where we're going with them being part of this in the future. And like you said, if Loki can pull that off, then he really does save humanity. Obi cannot open the blast doors without the proper temporal aura. And so he and his protege Casey both assume that they need He Who Remains. But that guy is dead. And
well, what are they going to do? The current version of him is dead. I think there's a good chance that this Victor Timely character will be an earlier version of He Who Remains. And so when he comes, he'll have the same temporal aura. I just wanted to point out two things. One is the loom, that we get a beautiful shot of the loom full, like the full frame is the loom. Mm-hmm. And it's more, it looks more fleshed out, more rendered than mm-hmm. it did in last episode when we see it. And you really see the strands of time looped together on the side that it's, you know, coming out and forming
woven.
Where it's woven. Thank you. And I don't know. It looks like a beautiful musical instrument almost. You know what I mean?
That's
I thought it was really pretty and well done.
I'm kind of picturing it in my head, and there's more strands of pink, and I do feel like it kind of pulses in the middle of the hourglass portion of the structure. And we were talking last week that the director of this episode was their visual effects artist. So I wonder if he wanted to just really flesh that out.
Yeah, it seems like he definitely took to heart the idea of, you know, doing a little bit more on that. So the other is the camera angles again. You know, every episode they do some funky things with camera angles. When they're bringing in the device to torture him with X5, the camera's upside down again, kind of like when they were going in to see the Time Lords, and then, you know, it turns upside down and then heads in and then it turns right back up. And
there was some of that right before they got to Void at the end of time.
Yeah, exactly. So they were doing that again, kind of this idea that the things are getting turned upside down and crazy. I thought that was kind of cool. And then I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I don't know if maybe you want me to stay timeline of the story, but when Loki leaves Sylvie, he looks back, you can tell he's torn. He doesn't want to leave her, but now he's committed to trying to do the right thing and to solve this problem, and that he's kind of reconciled that she and he look at this differently. So he walks through and is kind of very determined. But for the first time, the camera doesn't stop when he walks through.
Can you clarify where this departure is?
This is the final battle when they confront Docs and they fight everybody
in the airplane hangar, which is maybe not what it is.
Right.
And he goes through a time door, and she's kind of over on the right hand side of the screen. Thank you.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
And so at the end of that scene, and he's leaving, and he walks out through the door, and the camera keeps going as if it's following him through the door.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
But he's not there, obviously, but it follows them through the door, and then we see him, and then she follows behind him. I just thought it was just a really beautiful visual way to do that, to tell that kind of emotional connection. And, you know, I'm leaving you because, you know, I feel like I have to do the right thing, and, you know, you obviously don't want to be with me. And then that's emphasized visually as he is no longer there after the other side of the door, but then she comes through the door. It was kind of like the camera dragged her through because I thought it was really artful.
It was really reminiscent of them in Rock's cart as well, because she opens up a time door at the end of episode 2 of season 1, and he does follow her when Mobius is kind of running after saying, no, don't leave me, we're friends now.
Right. And I think at first it cuts away from him, and it shows him trying to decide what to do. And then the camera goes to the other side of the door, and you don't know what he chose. And then you see him come through. So yeah, I agree. I think that it's a similar type of thing. Beautiful.
So
okay, that's it.
I feel like I want to talk about that airplane hangar then. I mean, I think there's a lot to say there, because it's us getting to watch Loki and Sylvie fight together, we also get to see Sylvie, not, I'm sorry. Yeah, maybe Sylvie. I think I was right the first time. General Dox and what she's been doing. And we get to see the outcome of what General Dox has been doing. So I guess you guys probably feel similar to me that it was gorgeous to watch Sylvie and Loki fight alongside each other and then eventually hold hands and shoot green power balls or like a big power wave.
Yeah, balls.
Ultimate power balls. Across
balls.
Across. Liv,
I like how she looks at him really quickly for the last second when like she takes his hand and you can tell he's startled and she's like, what did she say? She said, don't read
don't
into it.
Don't overthink it. Thank you for bringing that up because I think that means so many things. First of all, she's so mad at him. And she's like, we are not back together. Like, this does not mean that. And then also, I think it reminded me of when they joined hands and fought. Enchanted. Eliath last season, they held hands. And he had to figure out how to do it. He had to think really hard about it. In this case, she's like, hold my hand and we're going to just blast them.
Right. Don't overthink it. But it was also, I think, a comment or a line that had many meanings. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, I'm taking your hand, but don't overthink that, don't overthink the relationship here.
We're not back together. Right. Yeah.
But
this is, I'm not your girlfriend.
But a deeper layer of that is who would say that unless there's some part of them that also feels like there's something here and it makes me a little nervous.
Mad at him because he didn't agree with her when she wanted to kill he who remains. And also he does look like he's working for the TVA and that is her sworn enemy. So I could see why she'd be mad about that. But,
right.
You know, Sylvie, just talking about things can really help.
I thought it was funny when X5 and Morbius were talking over the meal and they come to the Loki situation. And I think he says something to the fact of with the two of them, it's like you're basically in a relationship with yourself.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to work out because X5 is like, can we get out of here, motherfuckers? It's about to get blown up because all he knows is that it's a branch. And all the branches are going down.
Right.
This one doesn't, which is the whole thing. He's like, can we go? And he's like, no, the conversations are long when you have to talk to yourself about your relationship. It was like opposites attract.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. Then he says that. He said, no.
No.
Yeah. But it's also, I think, again, another comment that the show is making about personal growth and self-awareness and, insight into ourselves. You know, it's in order to be in a healthy relationship, you basically have to be in a healthy relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, they're just making a actual real life relationship between the two, but they're kind of making a more metaphorical comment about, you know, the struggles inside of our own self and coming to terms with that and become having a healthy relationship with ourselves in order to be better people and be able to interact and have better relationships with people.
Well, I mean, these are two people who are doing quite a bit of growing. Sylvie, because she wasn't parented and had no society to grow up amongst. And then Loki, because he was not well adjusted, but he's really getting there. I thought the McDonald's scenes were pretty funny. I thought that the scene when they walk in and Loki looks over at Sylvie meaningfully, I thought that was gorgeous. And then it lingers just a second and X5 goes, this feels tense.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, I laughed out loud at that one. And then, that whole conversation when they were sitting there and then they did finally get out of there. And then she calls the TVA because she's there with them now, right? Does she leave? No. So from McDonald's, they drop off X5.
She does go with them because X5 starts to tell them what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. But he's trying not to, but he's trying to get the hell out of there and he wants them all to leave. So she goes over and enchants him.
Oh, that's right.
To find out, yeah, to find out what it is that's actually happening. That's when she realizes they're going to blow all the timelines. That's when
she changes her clothes with her little wrist thingy.
She just changes to her uniform. You know,
right.
She can cast illusions too.
Yeah, that was cute. Yeah. And then they kind of push X5 through a time door, and he's kind of lands face first, or like on his butt in the TVA control room, and they don't go in there with him because they go straight to the airplane hangar and start fighting there. Where Docs is leading an entire group of people who are hopping in and out of time doors, taking charges,
So I think next week we're gonna, you know, they've obviously captured Docs. They show us, you know, that they've captured her, that she's in handcuffs. They're bringing her to the TVA. So they're gonna, you know, we're gonna learn a lot more about Docs and what her background is. But what I was trying to say earlier is that someone told her, you know, remember she says what does she say to X5? She says, you got to find Sylvie because the Time Lords were fake, but all that they said was
and
true.
Their meaning was real,
yeah,
kind
their
of.
Meaning was
yeah.
Real,
right.
You know, and so there's some sort of knowledge that she has been imparted with by somebody. Now that could be Miss Minutes. It could be He Who Remains before he got killed. It could be Renslayer. I don't know, but there seems like there's an architect behind all this that we haven't seen.
Yeah, okay, right. You did mention the architect thing earlier.
I just like that word. I thought it was interesting that B-15 is now no longer wearing a hunter outfit. Have you guys noticed that? She's dressed like a judge.
Right.
Okay,
she has the tie, and so I don't know if she's been promoted or she just decided she's taken over or what.
Yeah. But,
She's had enough. She's not doing that hunting shit anymore. And then also that Sylvie still has the He Who Remains template.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me that she still has the ability to slip through time. So she can go to an alternate branch, but then she can go back and forth in time in that branch, which is how I think we're going to end up finding out that Docs and her are the same character, just at different times.
Oh,
yeah.
So wait, do you think she'll approach?
So I think Docs wants to kill Sylvie because she doesn't want her to come and find her and get her.
Okay.
You know, or maybe she wants to keep her alive because if she's not alive, then she won't have her future.
Yeah, maybe they're exactly the same timeline.
Right, they could be, and she's just jumping back and forth, and that's an earlier version of her.
Saying in this theory that would mean Docs is after Sylvie and trying to hurt her, because I think she tried to protect Sylvie in this case.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It could be that she's trying to get rid of her so that she can't get her, she can't get Docs, or maybe she's trying to protect her because she has to in order for Docs
to live
and become what she is.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I do.
Because her template is different than anybody else's. Hers has, you know, which gave He Who Remains the ability to know exactly what was going to happen when it was going to happen, because he could go back and see it and then come forward and change it.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? That's the whole point in the end of the last season, when he's, you know, anticipating he could write everything and make sure he knew how it was all going to go.
You're not theorizing that Sylvie can kind of do that part right now?
Well, she has the power to do that.
She has the tool.
Right, she has the tool to do that, and they made sure to let us see that she sits there and she's playing with it and she's looking at it, and at the end, just before the scene cuts out, she knows that tool that she has in her hand.
It's very important, very powerful,
and very powerful, exactly.
But I just think she's trying to figure out what to do with it, because she does make a point in the episode to say the future isn't written. That sounds a lot like, you know, the old TVA, and I gave us back free will. So I think she does want there to be free will, but I agree with everybody that Sylvie and Docs seem to be some sort of version of the same person. But Docs looked kind of defeated when she was being handcuffed or whatever by Mobius when she got caught. I like that you guys are saying that you think she'll explain a bunch and she'll be important in a future episode, but she didn't seem to have all of that like nefarious power that I would imagine an actress from Game of Thrones having. You know, I hope they didn't just use her and throw her away and that she's still going to be important.
Oh yeah, I
and if she's still so. Be, she is important.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is her character was not exactly the most sane person in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I could use a little bit of insanity.
She was throwing people out the window, little, you know, breastfeeding until the kid was 12. I mean, you know, we're not exactly talking.
And what's wrong with that?
You know, whatever that was, I don't need that in my life.
Yeah.
But you know what? Lord Baelish got it in the end. So, and he's my guy.
Well, I saw an interesting Screen Crush is a review site that I love to watch.
And, yeah.
Ryan Neary. And he proposed a theory that possibly the person that's the architect, to use my favorite word for this today's episode, could be Morbius. And that Morbius may be the secret big bad of this whole season. And that, well, we see, you know, with his starting to fall apart, we got mind wipe stuff going on. Maybe he wipes people's minds. He doesn't want to go back, wants to stay. You know, I don't know. Maybe there's different versions of him.
He's falling apart because he's in the middle of his own personal growth. I mean, he was essentially born a grown-up baby in the TVA because he had no memory of a life he had lived before. And he was just like, I'm a worker bee. I'm a bureaucrat. Like, do my job. Now he's like, oh, wait, there are emotions. There are actually people that depend on me.
I think he's much more complicated character than we've been led to believe so far. You know what I mean?
Well, because he's a person and he's learning that, you know, I had a life and I don't think I want to go back and find out what that is.
Yeah, but yeah. But you know, like XB, I get all the letters mixed. B15, that's, there you go. B15 found out about her situation, became very sad and very focused and determined to fight and resist. She didn't turn around and fucking snap on this guy who's, you know, subdued and powerless and being interrogated and just beat, you know, just whack him and start beating him. You know what I mean? It's like there's a edge to him that I think we're going to start to see that we hadn't seen before. And then, of course, you know, somebody pruned Loki that we don't know about yet. We don't know who that is, but it was somebody who knew they would be there. I don't know. Just that this, I thought it was an interesting idea. I don't know if it's got any merit or not.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm convinced there's an architect or if all of this is just happening because of the collapse of the Citadel. I mean, there could, but you're right. With Docs being imprisoned, is she the big bad? With Raphael Castle, who is Brad Wolf, who is X5, just kind of being a douche canoe who likes to be in movies. He's not a bad guy. That's your douche real favorite canoe. Word.
Okay, so
it's not those of you,
wait,
this can be my new word for next episode.
Wait, douche so canoe. For those of you playing at home, the drinking game is architect
and douche canoe
and balls. Every time you hear that, you must drink.
You gotta drink.
The most fun podcast. Okay, what did we miss?
That's
so
all.
So at the very end.
Oh, wait a minute. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, at the very end, Ravona doesn't say it. I was about to say Ravona says, but Casey says that he got a hit on Ravona Renslayer's temp pad. And I guess that the reason he was able to get that hit is because Docs had killed, you know, 17 trillion people. And now there's just really like three branches left. I mean, literally per the picture, and I'm assuming Sylvie's on one of them, and Ravona Renslayer's on one, and I don't know who's on the third, but that's it, right? They didn't give us any other clues to what they, like, we don't know what timeline she's on or anything like that.
Well, there's one little interesting clue. It's in the monitor, and it says, as it, you see the timeline and you see the branches that have been, you know, all the, and they're like, it was cool how they were showing them slowly deteriorating and falling off and everything else, and there's the three or four that are left, but the monitor says up at the top 616,
right?
It says it like three times.
Yeah, which begs the question, you know, is the sacred timeline this, and we know 616 is the Marvel Universe, the MCU, because in Multiverse of Madness, they went to the 838 universe and they met the doctor that is the girlfriend of Doctor Strange. Can't remember her name. Yeah. But anyway, and she explains that, that's the 838 universe and that they've designated his universe as 616, which is what the Marvel Universe is. So it's just kind of interesting, because does that mean that the sacred timeline is actually just the one universe's timeline? It must be, right? And that there are many universes and they all have their own timelines.
So we kind of touched on that last week, because I read an interview with Michael Waldron about how he will not confirm that all of these timelines are different universes. He kind of said no. And if that's not the case, if each timeline isn't a distinct universe, then what that means is what you just said, that 616 has almost infinite timelines on it, whereas there are then infinite universes as well with infinite timelines in those. And that is just a hell of a lot of infinites. But I mean, the show does use the concept that these lines are universes and not just timelines. So either they're not sure or they're not sure. But you're right, it said 616 a number of times.
But then the question is the TVA just responsible for monitoring the 616 sacred timeline?
Well, I mean, I thought we were
TVAs for every single universe.
Then why would he be, why would he who remains be monitoring the timeline of only his universe if only his universe would make? Don't the bad Kangs come from other universes? Like, doesn't he need to be monitoring those universes?
It's giving me a headache.
I know. That's what Jason said at the beginning. He was like, I'm glad you guys are covering Loki because it gives me a headache. And now I know why. And also, speaking of listening to you and Jason, I listened to you guys argue for an hour once on What If? Yeah. I don't know, because I didn't watch What If.
Well, that was the one. I mean, I've guest hosted on other shows, but the one that he and I did together was just the two of us.
Oh, it was Moon Knight.
What If? Oh, yeah, no, you're right. We did Moon Knight as well. Duh.
Okay, I did watch Moon Knight. It must have been that. But you guys argued on whether or not you thought 616 was an appropriate name for the MCU, considering that the comics had already named themselves 616 and their different plot lines. The comics versus the MCU.
Right.
I don't remember who was on what side.
Well, the important thing is was I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because you architected that.
That's right.
Wall. I was the architect. What was the other word, Sydney?
That would be douche canoe.
So the other person.
What is
that
a douche canoe, by the way?
I really don't. Canoe, I don't know.
All right.
Who architected the balls?
Well,
I want someone to write in next week with. What is a douche canoe?
Dear douche canoes.
Douche canoe 1, douche canoe 2, douche canoe 3. That's how you should refer to us in your comments. The only other observation I made was I thought that the Janis Joplin closing song was a great choice.
Me too.
I'm not quite sure exactly why, but it's interesting. The name of it is called Cosmic Blues. And this is certainly a cosmic story. I thought that was kind of cool. Also, some of the main lyrics are it don't make no difference, baby, as if like what they do doesn't really, you know, again, the whole idea of free will, that whole thing, you know what I mean? So but it was just a great song to end on, you know.
Yeah, did a lot too. And then when I saw the name, honestly, I did not know the song, but I recognized her voice, which is just really exciting. I was like, this is a Janis Joplin song. I don't know.
And
which
she was, most of them, honestly. I don't know the timing. I don't know when that song was released, but I know her Pearl, I think was her big album, although I think she had other ones. That was the early 70s, which is appropriate with the time frame of the Zaniac movie and that whole opening.
Right. Right. Okay. How cute is Sylvie's little manager? What is he in high school? She's like, is your mom going to come pick you up?
Yeah. She's like worried about him. She's like, I'm going to bring you home again. It seemed like it wasn't the first time, you know, it seemed like she's probably giving him rides home a few times.
I think he had a crush on her too, because he was just
I
get
a little of that too.
And then, well, at first I was like, this is definitely a crush. And then I was like, oh, wait, didn't she just kind of skip out on half of a shift today? She just dipped. Like, she just disappeared through a time door and was like, gotta go fight bad guys. Well,
but that was kind of alluded to when he was like, now, are you going to come in tomorrow? I don't know what's going on with you. As if maybe this isn't the first time that she's just disappeared.
You know what I mean? No, I think it's probably her first. It was so not discussed with him. She wasn't like, Cam, can I clock out? She's like, maybe. I mean, I don't know. What she seems like a great employee. She's taking this seriously. This is her real life.
To me, it was more like he was asking because he was used to the fact that she often doesn't show up.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And, yeah. And that says to me, especially in conjunction at that scene, at that moment, she's looking and dealing with the template that, you know, that was He Who Remains. It kind of implies to me she may jump around. She's not just hanging out in this timeline, enjoying herself and experiencing life. She's actively doing something that's jumping around on the timeline.
Okay, using that device. I hear you.
And I'm going to even go out and say that the writers might be taking it in this direction. She's all about restoring free will, but she also wants to write her own story, which would mean she'd have to control what happens. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So in some ways, she's starting to try and, be her own architect for her own timeline, her own experience of life, instead of just letting it happen, which is what she says she wants. But does anybody really want, if you think you could control whether you become rich or whether you become happy or whether you can marry and have a family or don't or this and that, you know, then if you could control that, then you wouldn't really have free will. You know what I mean?
I do. I don't think that's Sylvie's personality. I'd be surprised if she's doing it for that reason. I think that, you know, she's been through enough that she really does want to do good. I think that the only person who has like succumbed to their baser instincts of like, I want to be rich and famous so far has been X5, because both Loki and Sylvie at the Citadel were offered the chance to rule timelines and be together and like be rich, and you know, all of these things were thrown at them. They were like, no, we're better than that. And I still think that she is, but I do start to agree with you that she might be moving around in time. So
maybe using the analogy of wanting to be rich was, I didn't mean that so literally. I just meant that I think she might be trying to, like, for instance, the motivation for why she went with them to help stop her was because her timeline was threatened. Mm-hmm. Well, if free will is free will, you know, shit's going to happen. You know what I mean? And it's like, she wants free will, but yet she wants to control what happens to the universe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it may just be starting, and maybe where it ends is where she becomes Doc's. You know what I mean? In other words, her future self is so now bought into this whole idea of controlling the future and controlling the timeline that she's actually become a valiant part of the TVA.
Okay, that's a good description of what her personality would need to be to kind of become.
Yeah, it has to evolve. It's always about, and it seems like with this show, it's all about personalities, evolution of different personalities and different
people. Right. I just want her to be happy.
Well, where's the story in that?
Yeah, she's not there yet.
Right. Maybe at the end.
Maybe. I think so. So anyways, I think we're going to pick up next week with Ramona Rensselaer.
They're going to make out?
I said make up. They've kissed. The only time they've kissed is at the Citadel, right?
Yeah,
and then she shoves him through the door.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, maybe next time she won't get rid of him in the middle of the make out.
Is she going to want him to generate duplicates of himself?
Stop. Or write
fan fiction. That's a whole different podcast.
That's a whole different podcast. And a whole different show.
Oh, so many listeners are just like, yes, that sounds good.
This is where my mind goes after 5 days of working at Comic-Con.
Did you go to the Marvel booth?
I did not. I walked by the area. It was not laid out like the traditional Marvel booth. It was more kind of a big marketing thing, you know? So they weren't like giving away posters or, you know, having, to my knowledge, I'd only walked by it once, having, you know, artists there or creators there signing stuff. And I didn't see any of that going on at the time. And I didn't see Image there or even DC. So some of the major publishers weren't there. Yeah. Just kind of weird.
I was listening to the official Marvel podcast this week because it dangled Loki information over me. But then I realized after listening to the entire podcast that it was actually just that like Loki and the TVA are going to start to be at the like Walt Disney Land in California. So cool. There's going to be like some TVA stuff over
like
there.
A ride or something?
I don't think so. Oh. I think it's smaller than that. Maybe eventually, right? But more, I don't know, like character stuff. And they're building something that looks like the TVA, I guess. But I listened to that kind of quickly. And then it talked about their booth at Comic-Con. And I mean, they were giving away a bunch of enamel pins. And I like those. I mean, did you see a bunch of people with those?
I did not.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Most of the time I was chained to my booth, which was on the way other side of the arena. And I did see a lot of people that were, you know, talking to Tom and meeting Tom. And, you know, I didn't hear much about what Marvel was doing about it, though.
Yeah. Did he have a hell of a line? Did it just?
I don't know. The actors and the guests were in a whole different section. It was downstairs. But yeah, I heard there were lots of lines for all of them. Yeah. There was a lot of great people there.
All right.
Anything else?
Not from me.
Alex?
No, I'm just enjoying all this.
I'm so glad.
wake up, brother. Wake up.
He just he heard the story about three Lokis and a Sylvie, and he was like, he hasn't said another word since.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. I'm <That's> done. They all go into a bar, and they had an architect with a bunch of balls, and
they balls met had to go into this
and they come out a douche canoe,
and they have
their douche canoe down the river.
And Obi makes a douche canoe that
I think Obi is so cool. And you know, where was it? I saw. I think it was on the Screen Crush review thing I was watching. They showed a clip of the actor when he was playing in the Goonies. I think he was in the Goonies.
Yeah, he was in the Goonies. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's yelling or screaming or and they're climbing this and the way he talks, it sounds just like OB, just a little
it totally does.
Yeah, totally.
He
different
looks and acts the same exact way.
Yeah.
He does seem to be a grown up because you know he's an inventor. His character is in Goonies. He has that waist belt that is like the Batman belt or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it can like shoot out one of those like scissor lift arms that would like grab stuff or like punch stuff and things like that. He's got like a retractable cable, I think, on it as well. So yeah, he's kind of it's a very similar character.
Well, maybe his Goonie character is his variant.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Both of
maybe
them.
That's where you got Prune from.
Short Round.
Right.
Short Round as well. I mean, maybe they're all variants of him.
There you
mm-hmm.
go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's really milking this whole thing. This whole Oscar.
So do y'all know that he obviously was a major, like he was a child star, Goonies, all the guys in Goonies were big stars. But obviously he's had a long adulthood without as many acting projects.
Yeah,
and in that time, he has been the like fight choreographer of a lot of major movies. Yeah. So if you have seen, which I hope you guys have, if you haven't, just pause this now and go watch it. And I'm talking to my co-hosts, not listeners. Like Everything
listeners
Everywhere
too.
All at Once. Yeah, everyone just stop. Let's go watch it together. I'll rent a theater. But Everything Everywhere
fantastic.
All at Once is so good. But he is a kung fu artist. I mean, he is absolutely intense. And if he doesn't do some kick-ass fights on the season,
that would be cool if I hope they do. I hope they do. That would be great.
He's so good. He's so good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think it has to come. I just don't know who he'll fight yet because I can't figure out who the bad guy is. Kirk knows.
I don't know. I have theories.
I really think OB has a lot to do with it.
They do.
What does?
I think OB is important.
Yeah, I think he's wild. I mean, he created the whole thing. He that's why I think he might end up being the actual person in the
architect.
End. The actual architect, yeah, maybe. But I think he may be the person who ends up running the whole thing at the end. But maybe not at the end of Loki. Maybe not at the end of Loki, but maybe at the end of, like, Secret Wars or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Or the Kang Dynasty. Probably the Kang Dynasty. I don't know. Who knows?
Be very satisfying to see him be, like, the new Nick Fury, like, in charge of... Nah. I don't know if Nick Fury was the best example to give there or analogy that for that, but, like, running S.H.I.E.L.D. versus running the TVA.
Yeah. I get it.
All right. So, listener feedback. I'm listening to Alex.
No, I was going to say, since we don't have any news, let's go to feedback.
Let's go.
All right. Angie writes, I just want to watch Loki walk down that alley and unbutton his tux jacket over and over again. I agree. Me too.
Oh my goodness, you gave me a short one. I see. Wow. Okay.
Rinaldi has something to say.
We got
Rinaldi.
Rinaldi speaks. Here we go. Let's go. Brad Wolf, aka X5, enhanced my viewing experience. Let me back up and explain because I know he's a jerk. When I listened to you guys' discussion of Loki season 2, episode 1, I got triggered. I was triggered when Kirk said, oh, geez, now I'm triggering our audience. That's great.
Sorry, Rinaldi.
That's right. When Kirk said, not much happened in Ahsoka season 1, and it was unsatisfying.
At least you were triggering him about Loki.
That's right. I could give a defense for the Ahsoka show, but Alex understands why Ahsoka is great, and that's enough for me. And if I did defend Ahsoka, this email would be 100 pages long and you guys wouldn't read it.
I would just send it over to, like, the Ahsoka podcast and be like, Jonathan, that's right. Here.
That's right. When Brad said, you're a failure and you got your mother killed, Loki was clearly triggered. But with Morbius' help, cooler heads prevailed. Yeah, I agree. But I also think he was acting to some degree. Sure, it hurt him. But I think he was trying to let X5 thinks that he was getting to him, and then that therefore when he started to become sadistic and evil, like, and threatening to him, it would be more effective. And then it didn't work, but, you know, with Alex's help, I realized I needed to calm down and have perspective.
Let me get this straight. I have a decent point that somebody thinks is worth something on this podcast.
Emotionally healing perspective is what I am hearing.
With Alex's help, I realized I needed to calm down and have perspective. In my previous email, I offended Alex, Sydney, and Kirk by stating only until the last 15 minutes of Loki was I invested in the season 1 and 2 Loki. And much like Loki's past actions, that was very harsh.
Rinaldi, you're so sweet. No, I welcome criticism of this show. Just of any show.
No,
I think it's.
I am glad that
Ahsoka's.
No, I am glad that he saw the error of his ways. And he realized that he was wrong, and that, you know, no. I mean, listen, I say this all the time. You know, if you watch a show and you don't like it, and then you watch it with somebody else that really gets it, and then you get it. It's awesome because then you can kind of get it. And, you know, the fact that you were misguided is okay.
Oh my gosh.
And Rinaldi, we still love you. And we can't wait for your 2-pager because Kirk will read it and I don't have to.
Well, listen, Rinaldi, you don't need to apologize or say anything like this. You know, how you feel about something is how you feel about it, and we want to hear both positive, negative, not only about the show but about our show. And so,
but he is right about Ahsoka.
Moving right along. Fortunately for all of you guys, I have only positive things to say about episode 2 of season 2 of Loki. I love Brad's rude and disrespectful demeanor. Yeah, I thought the guy did a good job, and what a range too, because it's so different than the guy we met last episode. Yeah. Because it set up a really tense and darkly funny interrogation scene. Great. It also set up the reveal that Mobius is too scared to see his variant Variant Self happy on the timeline. Yeah. So he and I want to know what his original path is on the timeline.
Yeah.
I agree.
Important.
I love the emotionally mature and honest conversation between Loki and Sylvie, as well as a great action sequence with the two of them working together.
Me too.
Yep, I agree. In fact, this episode has got me slightly, keyword slightly, invested in the Loki and Sylvie relationship.
Rinaldi, so, come on, just ship them already.
That's right. Sylvie came out of this episode in a more positive light for me because I thought she was a terrible character in season one.
Ouch.
Bitch slapped. And I'm a little sad that Loki is just somebody that Sylvie used to know. I do like to intentionally quote song lyrics from humor's sake.
So I was right last week.
Yes. Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing what Renslayer is up to. Hopefully Kang doesn't find another dude in Renslayer's bed. Another song lyric reference. If I like what I see regarding her character, then my redemption towards full positivity will be complete. My variant Vernaldi still doesn't like or care about Sylvie. Hopefully he doesn't team up with Brad to cause trouble. Well, Sylvie did kill 400 of my coworkers, or did you forget about that? Brad Wolf towards Loki and Mobius for all time, always Rinaldi.
I mean, he is not wrong. And I think that Rinaldi, your email is where I like put it together. I just didn't realize that you had given it to me that, yeah, Sylvie was a super murderer, just kind of like Docs ends up being on that one. Rinaldi, thank you so much for your email.
Thank you, Rinaldi. We appreciate all your feedback.
Okay, and Danielle writes, I loved the cold open last night. It was great to see Loki remember what he's capable of outside the TVA. I had literally just said at the screen, a bit annoyed, why are you running? You're literally a god, when he started getting really aggressive.
That's very great.
Satisfying.
It is great.
I also really adored Tom Hiddleston's face acting when he first stepped in and saw Sylvie. He loves her so, so much. I so agree. I thought that was such a beautiful scene inside that McDonald's. And also, I'm going to give her a lot of credit for her face acting a minute later when,
yeah.
Well, probably there too, but when she ends up going inside the TVA, I guess after the airplane hangar thing, and she looks around and her face just gets like really dark over time. So she's got a good face actress as well.
Yeah, I agree.
That is all of our listener feedback. Thank you guys so much for writing in.
We appreciate it. Please, you know, if you're listening, take a couple minutes, send us some feedback. We look forward to it. It
makes it a lot of fun to talk about what you guys have to say.
You know, if anybody's actually out there listening.
These three people, write in again next week, please.
Sometimes I feel like we're talking to ourselves.
Well, folks, thank you so much. Like the guy said, you know, the feedback is always welcome. And especially, you know, we're giving Rinaldi a little extra stuff. But you know what? The fact is, you know, people are passionate about this stuff. And it's like an onion. There's many layers. And we still don't know where it's going to go because they're still writing the story, so to speak. And next week, we're halfway there, guys. It is so short. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some real action. I know a lot of people didn't like this episode, but every episode.
Really?
No, I'm just saying.
Where'd you hear that?
It wasn't my favorite. He might be quoting me. I didn't want to like negative.
But what I mean by that, what I mean by that is you can't have a 10 for every episode. You got to set stuff up. So, I mean, I like the episode a lot, but I'm just saying.
It was a 10 for me. I love it. I mean, it's awesome. I think that this, here's one observation. I was worried about this episode because the whole Zaniac thing concerned me. And I was worried that we were going to get like an X-Files case of the week type of thing, that while the main story is going on, they've got to go over and solve this problem or this case, you know, about this escaped variant and yada, yada, yada. But it wasn't. I mean, it was absolutely intertwined and relevant to and continued the story, you know, and I love that.
I'm ready for them to go to the World's Fair. I mean, I've read some stuff about the World's Fair. I mean, I've you know, monster in the white, devil in the white city. I don't know if you guys know what that is. I'll probably bring it up
when we the murderer guy in Chicago. Yep,
exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I kind of have like a fascination with that World's Fair. So I think it's going to be plus like with all of the artistry in this show, it'll be quite a set that they put together. I look forward to seeing it. And I don't know if that's this coming week. I think we're going to see Renslayer in this coming week, but maybe that's exactly where we see her. So fingers crossed for the World's Fair.
Yeah, I think so. I think we also are going to finally get to, we're going to get the first introduction of Victor Timely.
Yeah.
I think so.
That said, folks, if you want to keep the conversation going, you want to leave feedback for this episode or any episode that we've talked about, you can reach us at podcastica.com. When you do that, you can either send a voicemail or an email. If you do want to also email, you can do talk@podcastica.com. And we'll read it on the next episode that we have. What is the conclusion for Comic-Con? Was it a success? Do you think it was a success all the way around?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was, I had a great time. I'm exhausted, but it was fantastic. And I think everybody that I saw was having the time of their lives. And it was amazing. Yeah. I highly recommend it. If you've not gone to a convention, that's a good one. San Diego is awesome, fantastic. Haven't been in many, many years, though, so I don't know what it's like now. But this show just continues to get better and better and better.
Well, I just want to, you know, because I know you do a lot of comic book stuff. My daughter started reading graphic novels. And
good for her.
Yeah, yes. And there's this writer, and I can't think of her name, but she's got a book called Camp, and then she just got a book called Act, and another book called Click, and she read through, she's on the third book in like, it seems like 3 days, but it's not, and we're going to be reviewing Camp this week on our podcast for Daddy-Daughter Bookworms. Awesome. But the point being is, you know, the graphic novels that you grew up with back in the 70s and 80s were groundbreaking, and they've always been there, but it's just so interesting to see that an 8-year-old girl written by a 20-something woman author is just, you know, really getting it right and really kind of keeping those that talent alive. I mean, since we've been doing this podcast, I know that you always know the difference between the writer and the illustrator, but I've learned so much about these kind of people. And I don't know if you had to do this where you get text and you have to kind of create the whole world visually. And it's just so neat how people like yourself just get it right, because she's the writer, she's not the illustrator, and it's just kind of neat. I mean, this is where it all comes from, which is comic books. So you want to call comic books, graphic novels, you know, it's like pre-owned, used car, it's all the same stuff. So I'm just so happy that you gave us a little bit of a tidbit of what's going on in at Comic-Con, and I know you really did see Tom, you just didn't want to tell Sydney because
from me,
and you know, details. We know you saw the actress that plays Sylvie, and you know,
I don't know,
but I know you guys braided each other's hair and you talked about movie stars and all that kind of good stuff. But that's great. But that said, that's our show. My name is Alex,
and I'm Sydney,
and I'm Kirk for all time,
always.
Still think that scene.
Perfect.
Train wreck. I think train we're going to get that right by episode 7.
Done.
And if by right you mean we're going to stop doing it, I agree.
I think so.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.